Hi everyone, here we are with yet another one of our occasional podcasts. This time I'm really blessed because I've got my good friend and colleague out in Germany, Klaus Pertl, who's going to share with us lots of good stuff about his involvement with Mindstore and obviously his amazing work with the centre in Stuttgart. Many of you know I'm really passionate about that. But Klaus, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much, Jack. I'm very, very happy and pleased to be on your podcast today.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Klaus, as you probably know, what we're doing with this is initially providing a service to Mindstore people just to encourage them, inspire them. And obviously other people may listen to it, but for the interest of Mindstore people, can you share a wee bit as we begin now with your credentials with Mindstore?
Yes, absolutely. It was quite an interesting journey. I came in 1987 to the UK, and I studied in London business administration.
Yep.
And in 1990, I started to be self-employed, helping people with technical products. And in 1997, I saw an advertisement somewhere in a magazine that become a futurist. And my background was business banking. I was working for Standard & Poor's, S&P, yeah. And I was analyzing German and Austrian and Swiss banks. So my background going way, way back was basically left brain, going from the past into the now.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated with the idea, is there from the now to the future? Can we influence that? And then obviously the idea of becoming a futurist was very appealing. And so I contacted you and we met and you said the only way to find out what Mindstore is really about is to attend. And I came to Kensington, I think it was Kensington Town Hall, yes,
yeah.
Yes. And I was so fascinated that in the first day at lunch, I'm not quite sure if you remember, I came up to the stage and said, Jack, what you're doing is amazing. I would like to be involved. I believe there's something that totally fascinates me. And you said, okay, let's talk about that. So that was the starting point of the journey with you. And you then taught me personally. And in 1998, I moved with my wife Sabine to Munich first, to Germany, back to Germany,
yep.
And started teaching the Mindstore in Germany. And we started with open Mindstore for Business courses and yep. Then moved into inviting more and more representatives of companies and then doing more and more in-house work. So this yep. is how it developed.
And what's interesting was I remember some of the early frustrations in terms of building up the business for yourself there in Germany. And you chose Munich because it was perhaps the obvious place to go in terms of where your thinking was. But one of the things that I also got involved with round about that time, as you know, and it might surprise some people now, was I was very interested in astrology, not the stuff that we have in the back of magazines or in the newspaper, all that sort of nonsense, but rather specifically to do with the moment something was born and where it was born, and obviously a human being, but it could be other things too. It could be a country or an institution or a business. But I was also interested in what's called astrology, which is more to do about where things are happening. And there was a kind of feeling that maybe, although Munich would be the obvious place to go, maybe there was a better place in Germany, and you did something about that, didn't you?
Yes, when we started, oh, you're absolutely right. It was very challenging to get in contact with those HR people in those big organizations, and I would call them, I would write to them, and they basically said, thank you, but don't contact me again. So it was kind of like, oh my God, it was really frustrating in that sense. But I also was always learning and improving from each of those conversations.
Yeah.
And yes, you're right. We looked at the is it the ideal location? And then interesting enough, it was more. It would be better to go to Stuttgart area, and this is where I originally came from.
Yeah.
And it then picked up. So there was definitely improvement. And from that analysis of Munich was for me and for my wife more a leisure, recreational. I'm not quite sure what it's called. I think it's called a line, so more recreational.
Yep.
Line and and it was a little bit like that. It was a nice area, but it didn't move that fast. And then going back to Stuttgart, it did pick up then. And but I also have to say, Jack, it was additionally to that, it was lots of programming and visualizing, because the way how some of the clients I got in contact with, you could not plan for that. You could not, think it through. And the coincidences that came then eventually were quite amazing. But it took me, the only thing that really was for me quite an interesting learning, it took me longer than expected, but it happened.
Yeah.
So the big learning was don't get frustrated with the timeline. So if it doesn't happen that quickly, that's my big learning here.
Yeah, when it comes to classic programming, it's the desire, the belief, and the expectation. And well, you had all the desire. I remember some of those conversations we had, and I came out to Munich and so on, and it was frustrating and disappointing in some ways. But yet, I always knew that you just had that. You're a big guy anyway, but you were just full of self belief, and you knew it would come together. And it did, and that's the great lesson for everyone, that when we program is we do have to have that inner strength not to entertain, doubt, self-doubt, searching for the negative. It's reinforcing the positive and really believing. And I suppose the classic statement, just going that extra mile. In your case, you went, 200 or 300 miles, but nevertheless, mm-hmm. you kept going, and you were open-minded about alternatives, which was fascinating.
Yeah. And I also think, if I look back in hindsight, all those companies that I really programmed wanted, and they all did reject me, by the way, every single one of them, they all became in the end customers. So it was just amazing. And
wow.
One of the big interesting stories I had was with, I'm hoping I can mention the name, is a big bank, an American bank, here in Frankfurt. And I wanted to work with them, and so I called up and I said, hey, this is what I'm doing, it's a fantastic program for your executives, and it's really cool, and becoming a futurist and all of that. And I remember that woman, she would say, well, no, this is too soft, we need hard skills, we have to do time management or something like that.
Yes.
And she would always blow me off, kind of like, and I always said, can I call you back? It's another time. And she said, no, I don't think it's going to change anything. But anyway, I put it down 6 months later to call back. And then my customer, CRM system said, here, 6 months. And I called her again. And she said, oh, it's you again. I said to you, don't call me again. I'm not really interested in that. I said, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So I put it down. Then I put in 9 months. So I gave her a bit more time. And then I called up again. A new person was there. And she said, you spoke with my colleague. Said, well, I've been in contact and everything. And she said, what do you do? And I explained a little bit what we were doing. And she said, oh, yeah, we like that. We're looking for that. Can you come by? And it was like, so it just, they said no initially, but eventually they said yes. So it needs a determination, I think. And I always knew, and that was for me the driving energy as well. I knew if somebody would do the 2-day mind store, I knew they would benefit from it.
Yeah.
So, but they don't know it yet because they have never experienced it.
Yeah, that's right. So that's the persistence thing.
Yeah, and I had that knowledge advantage. So therefore, I could always encourage and motivate myself, inspire myself to say, once they do it, they're gonna love it.
Yeah.
So keep going and call again and call again.
It's a really important point, especially for a lot of people listening who often talk themselves out of, and I know this because we've both been doing this for so long, they talk themselves out of sharing it with their colleagues or their team or even their family because they rationalise they won't get it. And the thing is that 90%, maybe 94% of people, 5% even, who actually come and sit down and listen to us, they actually really enjoy it. They might not all use it, they might not use it all the time, but they really appreciate being exposed to all these things. And that ranges from all sorts of people. So it's that, you and I know that, we know that if people will just give us the time to listen and get involved, that then they're going to benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen it over and over, over so many years now. This is now the 20th year. This year that we are teaching here in Germany, the Mind Store, to so many wonderful people.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's coming back, that people, once they do it, they recognize something, that they find there are some real diamonds in there.
Yeah.
And once they really polish them a little bit, and it's not really that complicated, they do get an experience, and this is why they, at least some of them, stick with it for a very, very long time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And one of the things that inevitably happened when you went back to Stuttgart is you were living fairly close to your good old friend Lothar, yeah?
Exactly. Lothar Hirmeiser and myself, we know each other since we're age 14, the age of 14.
Yeah. And what I find an interesting crossover coincidence thing is, and not a lot of the listeners, but some listeners will know that I've had an ongoing challenge with my health, a sort of autoimmune disease type thing, which had caused me a lot of trouble. And I was always searching for alternatives because the traditional way of dealing with what they think I have isn't very good in the long term. And I always was looking alternatively. And one of the amazing things was that I found an Indian doctor who was working in Glasgow, and he had his formal clinic where he was working with the health service, but in the evenings he was having a private clinic when people were coming from all over to engage in his wonderful Indian herbal type remedies. They were phenomenal, and they certainly really were helping me. And lo and behold, I find that Lothar finds out about him, and I meet up with Lothar and him in his office in Glasgow. And that was an interesting crossover, because at that point you and him were really getting it together with the Budvig thing.
Yeah.
Maybe you could tell me a bit about how that all came about, because one of the things, again, I know, and at this point some people begin to get a wee bit squeamish perhaps. I know from experience, you start talking about the big C word, people get uncomfortable, a lot of people do, but there's a wonderful Mind Store story here, not just the what you end up doing, but in fact how it all comes together is extraordinary. And it's always about, every one of the podcasts so far have been an ordinary person doing something truly extraordinary with the tools and techniques. They're just different types of stories, but this is a wonderful story. So do you mind sharing a bit of that
course? Yeah. Lothar and myself, we played handball. Handball is probably not so well known in Great Britain. Mm-hmm. It is like a basketball team, two basketball
yeah.
teams playing against each other, an indoor thing.
Yeah.
And we had a very good friend, Werner. And we were 22, 23 years old, and he was diagnosed with cancer. And for us, there was no question. You know, there is, you know, standard medicine. They know exactly what to do, and they treated him. And about 10 years later, 15 years later, he had a very bad diagnosis again. And we, or Lothar asked me, can you please help our friend? Because we knew an American journalist, a medical journalist, Lynn McTaggart, and she
yes.
has written quite interesting books, What
yes.
Doctors Don't Tell You.
Indeed.
And so I contacted her. We knew her from a couple of meetings, and she said, well, you know, in this case, I would ask somebody in America, Frank, and I called up Frank, and Frank gave me some ideas, suggestions. And eventually, we passed the information on to our friend. But to our surprise, there was no openness. So nobody was kind of like in the hospital open or interested in any of that, or any of that information.
Yeah.
So it was rather stressful for everybody. And it was like there was tension, and people were shouting and being really upset that we even suggested anything. So that was a big learning, because we're a little bit naive in that respect, because we thought, well, everybody knows everything and it should be okay to share everything. But it wasn't. Now, unfortunately, then our friend passed away, and that Frank Wiewel then contacted us again and said, in London there's a big exhibition with very interesting doctors, if Lothar and myself wouldn't like to join. We said, yes, let's go there. And then we met really interesting doctors. And this was, for me, the breakthrough. They were not just weird people, you know, not such esoteric people wearing Birkenstock shoes and long hair and smelling of some kind of weed or something. This is how we, you know, assumed, because we said they can't be scientists. It's impossible. Yes. Otherwise, we would know.
Yes.
But they were all medical doctors.
Yeah.
And we said, oh, my God. And nicely dressed, by the way, as well. So, and they invited us to their centers, to their clinics. And then Lothar and myself said, wow, let's assume, and that was the question for us, let's assume they're right. There are other options.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be interesting to find out what they are and if they're really valid or not? And this was the beginning, so this is about 19 years ago, of a non-profit organization, and it's called People Against Cancer. We call it now Cancer 21, basically cancer in the 21st century.
Yeah.
And then we collected information about what is working, what's not working. So that was the beginning of our journey. So it was not that we picked it, but somehow we saw something which we found very, what's the word, undemocratic. Nobody knows about it. There is an uneven amount of information. There's very little on this so-called alternative, complementary, the integrative concept, and there's a lot of information on the other one.
Yeah.
So there's a information disparity, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And we thought, this is unfair. How can you make a good decision if you're lacking information and understanding? So we set up this idea of a help organization, just sharing the information. So this is how we got into it. Because we said, I don't want to complain all the time. I don't want to be upset about something, but rather I do something about it. Yeah. Complaining is not a good solution, I think.
No. And it's interesting, parallel to that, as many people know, if they're following Facebook, for example, I've ventured into looking at this whole high fat, very low carb and moderate protein type lifestyle, various ways of coming at that, wheat belly, grain brain, keto. And again, it's the same thing. When you actually get below the surface, there are just endless professors, scientists, researchers, medical practitioners, all on this wavelength, but they're a minority and it's not democratic, and they're not being heard other than in the background through bloggers and podcasts and stuff like that. And whenever you raise these types of things, as you guys did, the normal place doesn't want to hear it. It's very difficult for them, and so you end up getting blocked out. But that didn't stop you, though, because not only did you, and I had the privilege of being at one of those conferences that you had in Stuttgart with people against cancer, and it was just absolutely amazing. And it's so encouraging to hear doctors and professors and people stand on stage and give this alternative view. So tell us a bit more, because I also, for what it's worth, one of the great memories for me of this journey in terms of my playing a little bit in it, or being just a passenger from time to time, was you and I got a piece of work to do with, I was doing a lot of work with Motorola at the time, and I got a gig out in Baden-Baden.
Yes.
I was able to get, you know, you agreed to do it, and I was able to get the opportunity for you to sort of translate as I was teaching the course. So the people who didn't quite get English, there was German, and we were kind of balancing that back and forward. It was really cool. And then in the evening, one of the evenings, we had dinner with some of the senior people, and sitting beside us was a lady whose mother was rescued, and that's, I think, is the right word, in final stages, by Dr. Joanna Budvig. Do you want to see some more of the journey? Because it's really fascinating.
Absolutely, because the funny thing about Dr. Johanna Budwig was that we went all the way to America to meet this Frank Wiewel, and he said to us, "Have you heard of Dr. Johanna Budwig?" And we said, "No." And we said, "Where does she live?" And she said, he said, "Close to Stuttgart." Yeah. So he said, "I don't believe this."
Yeah.
And so he told me then that what she does is something that has to do with oil and cork. And I understood the word cork, which sounded for me like the bark of a tree, you know,
yes,
the cork.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I was thinking, okay, so what is she doing? That must be a really weird thing. So we honestly tried to get an appointment. We came back and we called her, "Can we meet her?" And she said, "No, she is not interested in meeting us." So we called Frank again and said, "Frank, please introduce us." And then he introduced us and she agreed to see us.
Yeah.
And I came in and I asked that silly, silly question. "So what do you do, oil and cork?" And she looked at me as if I were a different planet. And she said, "It's quark." You know, it's like a cottage cheese type thing.
Yeah.
And I was so embarrassed, you know, to even suggest the idea. And she was a genius. She was an amazing, amazing woman.
Yeah.
And she had worked for the German government, and she was a scientist. She had two PhDs. She studied medicine. She was treating people for 35 years with cancer with her Budwig diet or Budwig protocol. And it is just the logic. The whole thing is so logical and makes so much sense and is so in aligned with the natural way of how bodies, how cells work. So we were blown away with her.
Yeah.
But more than that, she shared with us her success stories. And she had treated more than 3,000 people in her time.
That's amazing, isn't
and,
it?
And yeah, absolutely. And she shared with us some of the stories and she gave us documentation. And it was like, wow. We were completely impressed. And by the way, the most interesting thing was half, or almost half her patients were either doctors, or medical doctors, or relative of medical doctors. So she was treating like lots of those scientists as well. Now, she had a simple but not easy to implement concept because you have to comply and you have to, you know, integrate it. So it's relatively simple, but, you know, it's not always easy to... change lifestyle. And then the two of us were sitting at that dinner, I know in Wiesbaden, and we talk a little bit about, you know, what did you have for breakfast? And I talked about my quark mix and talked a little bit about that. And so that lady said, "Are you talking about that Budwig thing, all protein diet?" I said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And then she said her mother basically was given up. She kind of like was sent home and it couldn't help her.
Yeah.
And she... it was, I think, 18 or 20 years ago.
That's right.
Went to Budwig and started the treatment. And she was, you know, basically alive 18 years later.
Yeah.
And the tumor didn't come back. So those kind of stories happen very often because a lot of people are, and this is the interesting thing, Jack, a lot of people are successfully overcoming things like cancer or chronic illnesses.
Yeah.
But the moment they decide not to go the traditional route, they feel a little bit a person who is healed, but it's a second or third class healing. You know?
Yes, yes.
So they don't want to talk too much about it because then maybe say, "Oh, you were a silly person. It was dangerous. You were jeopardizing your life. You were just really lucky."
Yeah.
And because... they don't want to hear that. They don't share so much. And also, doctors, interesting enough, don't hear those stories either because if somebody is healed, he's not usually not going back and telling the doctor what he was doing. So this is why it might surprise some people. But now I would say we don't need to be surprised because a lot of people have successfully over the last, not just 5 years, but 30, 40, 50 years implemented so-called alternative therapies.
Yeah. I mean, what is an interesting observation, you know, because when this was all happening parallel to that, you know, I'm building Mindstore, you were too, and they were getting more and more involved in this. And what I, you know, for people listening who are keen programmers, have got their own goals and they've been using MindStore, to what extent, this has always been something that fascinates me, to what extent do you think that the progress, which has been awesome, and we'll come to the big, big story shortly perhaps, but to what extent do you think that the progress and the journey unfolding was driven by you guys, or do you think something higher power perhaps was actually pulling you along? Is that a bit of both? Did you sense that? Or it's very interesting to me to observe that, especially how it all seemed to fall into place.
Yeah, it is definitely something is happening that we cannot really plan. So there's a bit of a both, I think.
Yeah.
The first thing we did visualize, Lothar, you know, we did also attend the very, very first MindStore, open MindStore seminar I ever did.
Yeah.
Lothar was there. So he's a very, very keen MindStore supporter. He's practicing the technique himself. Yeah. He loves his house on the right bank. And so he was one of the first who attended the very first open seminar. And both of us realized that this is a big project and it's a little bit outside of our expertise, and the help organization was easy to do because this is, you know, no big investment in that sense. But then we realized that all the people that very successfully, it was a lot of Lothar's work, that successfully handled cancer, they did three things. They did a change of diet, detoxification, and we would call it energetic work. So they reduced stress, looked at lifestyle and so on. Yeah. So those three, once he was clear, this is almost cracking the code in a sense. You know, this is the code, and we found it. And at least, not for 100%, but for probably 60, 70%, this is the code. Now, he said to me, Klaus, what do we do with that? You know, nobody wants to touch it because it means personal investment and risks and but I believe we should set up a center like that.
Yeah.
I kind of like said, oh, Lothar, this is big. This is very big. And, you know, we won't get support. We might get attacked, from the media. And I honestly said, I don't think I want to be involved with that. And I was kind of like saying no, but I didn't quite say no. But I said, let me think about it. But I was a little bit worried about it. And then I saw a film, Jack, and it was a film, Jack, about the cholera in London.
Yeah, and you're telling me this. It's a wonderful story.
And this is a guy called Dr. Snow, I believe his name was. It's 1850, and he realizes that cholera is transmitted not through the air, because that's what everybody believed, but poisoned water, more or less, because the sewage water was also the drinking water. And he realized that. And nobody believed him because the mindset, so to speak, the belief system was it is transmitted through the air. So therefore, cholera cannot be solved. He believed it can be solved. And he found an engineer, Bazalgette, I will pronounce it correctly. He created embankment, basically, a big engineer, famous engineer from London. And Bazalgette, he believed him. And he said, yes, I believe I know exactly what to do. We just need to separate sewage water from drinking water. Simple. Two separate channels, or what do you call it, pipelines under the earth. And he even had to invent a special kind of clay that would not, that's not water soluble and so on. And he championed the whole thing for 10 years with Parliament before he finally got the money. Eventually he gets the money and he solves cholera. It's solved. And it was relatively easy, you know. It was just a change in lifestyle. And I'm sitting at home and I'm seeing this film and I'm thinking, oh my God, what if it's true with the three E's as well? If you just follow those three things, you can solve it. And then I called Lothar and said, Lothar, let's do it. And it was completely clear. We had probably discovered something, and we might not be the best to bring it out in the world, but we started it. And we said, we have at least the guts and the courage to start something. And that's how the whole thing began. And then we said, yeah, that's program.
I think this is one of the great things that, again, for listeners and keen Mindstore people, is that one of the great things about our understanding is we don't concern ourselves with the how. We find the why, and we totally focus on the why, and the how manifests in all sorts of wonderful ways. And always at the right time. I would imagine if you had come across that film 2 years before, maybe even a year later, you know, you might not even have watched it.
Absolutely.
But something either deep in your subconscious or something of a higher power, whatever people believe in, and that doesn't matter what they believe in, but there's something different going on where you do watch it and it just clicks in that moment and suddenly the door's opening and off you run.
Absolutely. And you know, also with this property, we had programmed for 3 years at that point to find a property.
Yeah.
And we didn't find one. Because here in our, it's a very, you know, industrialized, well, not industrialized, but it's a very expensive area.
Yes.
And to find like 10,000 square foot, which is 1,000 square meter land, it's not huge. It's actually too small for a center. But to get that, you have to pay sometimes $1 million, sometimes €2 million.
Yeah.
So we were thinking, oh, that needs a lot of programming. And then we did a lot of programming. And we went to many places. We saw all sorts of places. And then one guy told us he might have a place. He has to check it with a friend from Mercedes-Benz. You know, Mercedes-Benz is obviously this huge car company.
Yeah.
And he came back and said, yep, they have a place. And he told us where the location is and said, I know that location. That's amazing. That's on the top of the mountain. That is where you can, it's amazing, super. I said, where is it? And he said, it's at the end there. And I said, that's a big, big area. It's about 22,000 square meters. I'm not sure what, but it's very big. And he said, yep, that's it. That's that piece. I said, oh, this must cost like, I don't know, 8 million, 10 million euros or something. He said, no, they have it on the books for 25 years.
Wow.
And they basically written it off. So they kind of like were okay to for a relatively low fee to depart with it. And we had our property. So it was like, it was never advertised. It was never out there. It was never with an agency. It's just amazing. It is amazing land. And so close to Stuttgart and is still in the forest more or less.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful how it just all comes together. And I had the privilege of being there the day that you guys opened it. It was truly, truly remarkable just to be present to that whole thing. And at the same weekend, having the conference for People Against Cancer in the city too. It was a very, very special weekend. And a few of us came over for that who were kicking around at the time interested, the Mindstore people, and we were just so truly inspired by it all.
Yeah, and it is a child in a sense of Mindstore as well. Because I'm very certain without all of that work on the wonderful skills and techniques I learned from you and that developed over the time with practicing, and if Lothar would have not met you and not discovered Mindstore, maybe none of that would have happened. So I think it has a lot to do with that, Jack.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have had the privilege of working with you both, getting to know you both and to be able to call you both friends and call on you both for help when my health's been challenged, which has been awesome. And I think that, but just in case someone's figuring out I've got cancer or had cancer, I don't have that, fortunately, but I have been able to use your services there and in fact, enjoy coming to the centre and just sitting in with everyone else and doing it as a kind of detox or a break. It's just phenomenal. And in fact, one of the things I was wanting to get to was that working with both yourself and Lothar, we all got together and we created that week-long retreat called Line in the Sand. When we did that in Scotland, that was an amazing experience in working with you both, bringing both your knowledge and interest into that and with a team of people collaborating to create something awesome. That was very, very special. And then doing one of those actually in the centre.
Yes, exactly.
Which was awesome. So... great stuff.
I completely enjoyed it. And I think the big advantage that people have that have done the Mind Store is that they are more sensitive to the reality that, as you said, thoughts are things, you know, and our thinking affects basically everything in life. And the connection, obviously, with thoughts and the body is even more direct. Because obviously through the glands and through the hormones and through that whole parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. Yeah. So there is definitely an even stronger, clearer link. And this is where I think Mind Store people do have a huge advantage over people who are a bit maybe unpracticed in that sense and maybe have to overcome mindset hurdles to go into relaxation, you know, and understand there's nothing bad about relaxation.
Yeah, of course. And scientifically now, when you and I were working those early days together, I mean, there wasn't a lot of science around supporting what we were doing. But now there's overwhelming interest now, and it's all over the world, and all sorts of universities have climbed into this space, from neuroscientists to people just studying the impact in their bodies of meditation and relaxation and mindfulness, for want of another word. And it's wonderful. And when I go into companies now, it's just no resistance whatsoever. They're just looking for, do you happen to have ways of doing it better than everyone else? And of course we do have.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. 20 years ago, if you went to it, my first people that attended seminars were engineers. Remember, Siemens, you know, Siemens engineers.
Yes.
And they kind of like said, what is he doing here? You know, and he's kind of like, he wants me to close my eyes and imagine a river, the house. And so it did take a while to get there. You're absolutely right, Jack. And it was almost literally impossible in a 20-minute presentation to integrate relaxation. These days, it's absolutely possible. So there's definitely a Zeitgeist, as they say in Germany.
Are those first early four-day courses over two weekends or two midweek days for companies, I couldn't get people to close their eyes till about 2:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It took the whole morning and much of the afternoon to get their trust to a point and the desire to a point when they were willing to do it. And even when then there were still lots of people in the audiences, and they were just small audiences initially, still with their one eye open, watching me, you know, kind of not trusting it, thinking I was going to brainwash them or something.
Yeah, exactly, the brainwashing thing. Yeah,
but that's all gone now, and you're right. Yeah. 20 minutes into any presentation, I've got people desperately wanting the meditation.
Yeah.
It's just changed. It's fantastic. But anyway, one of the great things about the centre is whenever I've been there, and increasingly people who have trusted me and have gone when they've come to me, you know, Mind Store people asking me about it and I tell them about things.
Yeah.
And some people practice at home initially, then they really want to go. They always love the experience, and they really particularly just, they thrive on it. And one of the amazing things, without getting into a lot of the technicalities of it, but one of the things I love about it is the fact that you do that blood test thing towards the beginning and towards the end, and people can see massive changes in their own body. And apart from their feeling good, there's some feedback there that's awesome. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah. It's called dark field blood analysis.
Yeah.
And it's a Professor Enderlein. I'm not quite sure if it's German, sounds German. He kind of like discovered a way of, you basically get a little drop of blood and you put it under the microscope.
Yeah.
And there you can see, I mean, just to look at that blood, it's like you're looking into the universe.
That's awesome, isn't it?
It looks like thousands or millions of stars.
Yes.
And it's just that tiny little drop of blood, you know, it's like it's almost nothing from your body system. And it's so full. It is so active. It is amazing. So first of all, it's inspiring to realize that as within, as without, you know, there's so much similarities. And then secondly, you're absolutely right. You can immediately see that the blood is tired, you know, it lacks energy, lacks oxygen and nutrients. And then 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks later, a completely different scenario, and this shows improves that the body always responds to good nutrients.
Yeah.
And good nutrients, that's what we, and there's a big thing here. Good nutrients are only to 20% nutrients itself, which is, you know, great fatty acids, great protein, vegetables, and so on. But 80% of the good nutrients is how you feel, how you know the outlook in life, the environment you're living in. If there is some kind of purpose that you found, there is some kind of community that supports you. So this is probably 80%, because the blood responds also to how we feel and think.
Awesome, just fantastic. And one of the things I always feel about you guys is whenever I'm in your presence, I feel as I'm sitting beside two giants. You are a giant, but big man. But it's the fact, for me, it's a lot of people listen to this, and I know from standing in front of endless audiences and, you know, daring to talk about it, and it is a dare, because some people, I remember often people got walked out. They were very upset with me talking about it. Because obviously it's very emotional. They're attached to their mum who died of cancer, or it brings back sordid memories and so on, sad times and tough times. But nevertheless, to me, it's like, I must share this. And what was what I find is that it's a challenging area for people to face up to, even just the word, you know, that has an immediate effect on their bodies. If you do muscle testing, it's immediate.
Yeah.
But one of the things I love about it is the fact that you guys every day go in to face people at the toughest points in their lives. You go in with a confidence, a strength, an awareness, a sympathy and an empathy, which is just extraordinary. And so when you think about all those people who have come and gone through the process, and obviously some are no longer with us, many are, is there any particular lessons that the Mindstore people and the people who are listening and who are not Mindstore people, not so much about the fear of cancer or going there, but when you look at the humanity that you've in those times of adversity, in those experiences of facing up to truths, is there anything that you've learned there that we can all take into our lives going forward?
Absolutely, Jack. And the one thing that is really, I think, very, very important is that exactly like every part of our life, some people will love something and some people will hate it.
Yes.
And but doesn't matter if you're emotionally hating or loving it, reality and the truth is the truth. And so we can shy away from it, ignore it, suppress it, hate everybody who thinks differently, but it's still the truth. It is still reality.
Yeah.
And therefore, we love the people that come here. I think that makes a big difference. And we would never, ever, ever give anybody up. So we know it is possible. And we know that the body is amazing. It's the most amazing thing in the world.
Yeah.
And we know if the body gets the support, and Dr. Johanna Budwig gave a very simple equation. She basically said this: if the body has a surplus on energy, the body can constantly repair. If there's a deficit in energy, the body cannot repair. And it is like if you have a debt, and it could be, you know, like £10,000, and your income is only 2,000 a month, and you're spending 2,500, your debt gets bigger.
Yeah.
If you earn 2,500 and your expenses is 2,000, you could repay 500 of that debt. So that's her logic, and we were amazed by the simplicity of that logic. And then it makes it so much clearer. It gives you confidence. Also, the people who come to us, once they understand that concept, it is hope-giving. It is encouraging, because especially when people hear the word, they lose hope because they believe this is, you know, not a good prediction. But if you follow Dr. Johanna Budwig's logic And then you know I have a strategy. There's a concept. I can focus on that. And that's real. And then obviously look at where we gain energy and where we lose energy. And the things we talked already about is the food, it's the light, it's what we drink, it is what, where we live, it's the thoughts. So it's not rocket science. And the body is able to recover. So this is what gives us such confidence that we know it is possible and we would never give anybody up. And we know that this is why we're here. We want to give and share that knowledge.
Yeah.
And the truth is that that is a truth.
Yeah. I mean, one the experience I had was many, many, many years ago. I had having a cough every other winter, and eventually I was doing some work actually at Rangers Football Club, and a doctor there noticed that I had something wrong, and he said, look, you need to go and see your doctor. And a long story, I go and see my doctor. The doctor makes an immediate assessment. It says I've got cancer. Now, unfortunately, I didn't have, but at the moment he says it, someone of authority giving you this word and telling you that you have it, and he's the authority figure, he's the doctor. Even with all the tools and techniques, and at that point I didn't have tapping, the thought field therapy stuff, to deal with anxiety and fear, but nevertheless, all the positive thinking that I had and all my self-belief in myself, dealing with that for the 48 hours it took from that initial diagnosis to actually it's not that, it was still something that was challenging, the thing I've been working with for the rest of my life since. But nevertheless, it's massive when that's given to you.
Yeah.
Even with all our awareness and all our tools and techniques, for someone not to have that awareness and not to have people of that thinking around them, it must be extraordinarily challenging, really challenging to deal with.
Exactly. And the big advantage, and this is probably why it's a little bit probably easier for Lothar, myself, and the people, the wonderful people who work in the center.
Awesome people.
We have seen those people who make it, and usually not a lot of people see them. Not a lot of people talk to them.
Yes,
and we talk a lot to them, and it is not rocket science. Oh. This is the amazing thing. But yes, it means we kind of like need to give up something to gain something else. So so it is in a sense an improvement, but. It's a little bit like everybody who's done Mindstore. It is probably very hard to tell somebody outside of the Mindstore world what you're doing and to tell them it's a good thing. And it's a little bit like that with everything that's outside of mainstream.
And therefore,
I think that's the only way anyway, Jack. It needs people like yourself that is very brave and has lots of courage to tell people, you know, close your eyes, go into the right bank, visualize, and it can come.
Yes.
This is a huge jump in confidence, whilst everybody a bit more left brain would say, this is utter nonsense, you know. and this, nowadays we would say, yes, we accept that. And it's a little bit with that concept as well. So people are opening up, but it's still a bit of a process. And that is one of the strongholds of medicine. But for example, in Germany, in Ecuador, in the UK, Czech, but anybody who has back problems these days, they start with acupuncture now.
Yeah.
They go into a traditional Chinese medicine clinics. They do yoga, they do mobilization exercises. So there is a new starting point, while in the past, the starting point was to have an operation.
Yeah, and even I'm glad you mentioned that. Myself, I still occasionally go and visit my doctor for stuff, over the years. But I also would, corresponding to that, in parallel to that, I would be going to see a Chinese doctor as well. And then I'd be looking at the yoga that I'm doing and the exercise patterns, because I've always taken personal responsibility for my health. I've never handed it over to a doctor or some other figure. I've taken full ownership, and it's made a huge difference for me. But just wondering for people listening too, I mean, I know in the early days, certainly one of the impressions I had from both of you, rightly or wrongly, was there was a kind of, you guys were, it felt like you were opposed to traditional approaches like, you know, chemotherapy and radiation, all that type of stuff, and cutting stuff out. But nowadays you seem to be a bit more softer in that. Do you want to say something about that?
Yes, I think the one of the reasons I believe while there is not really big progress is there is still too much fighting going on.
Yeah.
And it seems to be like it's either black or white, and that's not reality. So there is a grayish area in between.
Yeah.
And cooperation, I think, is probably a strategy that will eventually help more than just fighting and arguing and saying, no, this is wrong and this is right. So because it is a very, it's driven by very powerful structures and organizations that have a monopoly. Mm-hmm. They won't give in, they won't give up. There's no way that that fighting will ever work. So yes, we're opening up to that sense, and there is to some degree also in when the body is not capable of resolving it itself. There is a point when the body is not able anymore, then these are valid options. I think our argument is this: there are a lot of cases which some doctor call wait and see. So for them to do a soft approach would make so much sense. You know, that they don't have to fight their doctors. They don't have to argue against their doctors.
Yeah, yeah.
And for them, it would be a good one. And anybody who had already an operation or who is very happy with the treatments they received, but now wants to go a level deeper to find the source of cancer so that the reoccurrence is basically stopped, it would make again sense. So the approach has been softer. Maybe it has to do with age, Jack, and maybe less testosterone in the body. I don't know. But it's definitely something where we feel we cannot fight constantly. We need cooperation, but we're not giving up the key principle. And the key principle is, if you have the opportunity and you are a person who wants to do something alternative, it is an option. But a lot of people still go the traditional route, and that's fine.
Yes, of course. I mean, one of the wonderful things about it, again, it's parallel to the growth in MindStore in terms of our understanding of what we're doing with MindStore, is this big notion of why versus how. And one of the amazing things about being at the centre and journeying along and sharing my experience of just going there to detox with people who are actually facing this challenge is this notion of why do you have it? What, you know, what is the root of it? Questions that are never obviously asked in the hospital, and people spending those 4 or 5 weeks working that through. It's really, really profound. And it's also the big part of our motivation when we're setting our futures and our goals with MindStore. We're not worried about the how. You would never have thought for 1 minute you'd watch a film and suddenly get the aha moment that takes you forward. We never know how it's going to turn out, but we always know our why. Why is so critical in all of this.
Yeah, absolutely, Jake. And I think I was also drawn to you on a subconscious level, I'm sure, because I knew that at some point we're going to probably tackle something that is bigger, that I can handle.
Yeah.
And I needed some kind of concept, tool, maybe also, you know, a good friend like yourself that is a complete open person, a positive energy.
Yeah.
And therefore I was drawn to that because I knew I cannot do something that is relatively big without having a positive energy around me.
This is a fantastic contribution, Klaus. You know, for the listener, the big part of this is having the confidence to think big, but trusting that all the resources you need will just show up at the right time. And the you don't have to worry so much about that why thing, but more importantly, that here's a man, an extraordinary man, a genuinely extraordinary man, who was a banker, who reads a magazine article, and suddenly we're involved together. But you set this impossible goal, you get caught up in it, and yet you find the resources from a banking background to become someone who's doing phenomenal work at the sharp end of cancer. It's so for those of us who have our dreams and our goals, you don't really, really, really know yet just how resourceful you can be.
Exactly. And there is a wonderful ability in us humans, and it is that thing called curiosity.
Yeah.
And curiosity combined with a fascination, I would say, and to some degree, you need some level of ignorance as well, I believe. Wow. You can start something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Klaus, you've given your time freely today, and I know that it's Friday, and Fridays are very, very busy days in the centre, and a lot of people be wanting your attention. But you know, just for the people who do end up listening as we come to an end now, is there anything particular you intuitively know you want to say, or you've thought at some point I'd like to say to genuine great Mindstore people, you know, who are maybe some starting out in their journey with Mindstore, others are well through it, they've been coming back and forward for years, they're great aficionados, they're totally committed to what we're about. Anything you feel you'd like to say before we bring it to a close?
I think the whole experience with the center, and it can be a life lesson, I believe, because what is really worrying us here when we talk about the C word?
Yeah.
It is basically our thoughts and our mindsets.
Exactly.
And I think that is the key learning here. And once we realize, because we, Lothar and myself, have a completely different mindset what it means.
Yeah.
For us, it has a purpose. For us, it is not deadly. For us, it just means stop your life at the moment and rethink. And then energize your system. So we have, in a way, simplified the whole concept, and that has taken away the fear. And if we can use that metaphor for anything that somebody's facing, it could be a relationship,
yeah,
it could be a job, it could be becoming self-employed. Really, what's holding us back is not the thing itself. It is probably some mindset, some thought, some belief about it. Around it, and if we can find it, and meditation, stillness, relaxation, going in the house of the right bank, getting your inner directors, and then sitting down with them and exploring what is holding me back, and it's going to be a thought.
Yeah.
It is probably a thought that holds you back.
Always a thought.
And identify that, and therefore the metaphor is, don't take the word from others, because every person is 100% individual. Your body is 100% individual. Your life will be 100% individual. There is no statistic that can tell you,
yeah,
what your life's going to look like.
Yeah.
It is 100% you only. Your statistical group is one person. And,
yes,
and therefore, follow that logic. And that's what I've learned. Check the mindsets.
Do you know, Klaus, that's just, again, a wonderful way to come to an end. One of the great experiences I had in my this time last year, sitting amongst you guys, having the privilege of being there for three weeks and just submerging into the whole experience, was one of your instructors who came in and did the mindfulness part of the program, you know, a few hours through the process. And she was awesome, and she told all of us that she has three times, not once, not twice, three times being diagnosed with life-threatening cancer. And every time, just from the beauty of her face, her eyes, her love, her total surrender into this awareness, she said that each time it showed up, it allowed me to grow more.
Yeah,
it was just awesome to be a witness to someone saying that.
Yeah.
Well, Klaus,
thank
you for your time. Really, really appreciate it. I'm sure everyone's really enjoyed. Maybe we should talk again together sometime soon and let people just listen in to some of our ramblings.
Absolutely. It is always a pleasure. It's a massive pleasure. It's a fantastic pleasure, Jack. You're wonderful. And thank you for everything, because without you, none of this would have ever been possible. So thank you.
Thank you, Klaus. I appreciate that. Well, folks, Klaus there. So Klaus, goodbye now. Thanks for it again. And
bye-bye.
All the best to you in the centre.